Hey there, thanks for listening. I am Wouter Vertogen and this is the Freelancer Talk, a show where freelancers, artists, creators and entrepreneurs share their stories, struggles and best lessons learned while launching and managing their own businesses. Hello, all you freelancers. Welcome back to a brand new episode of the Freelancer Talk podcast. I am your host, Wouter Vertogen, and today I have invited a very dear old friend for me to join me on the podcast to talk about knowing your worth, because I think that's it's a topic that is very valuable and very valid for a lot of us freelancers. His name is Bilal Bashir, and he's actually here in my house today, which I'm really excited about because I hate all these Zoom interviews. So thank you for coming to my house, Bilal.
Of course. I'm happy to be here.
Yay. How are you doing during this lockdown? I don't know, like life is a bit like, oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think I'm going through the same thing that everybody's going through. Like it's just, you know, sometimes depressing and sometimes you just try to make the best out of it. Try to stay in shape, try to kind of keep life going wherever it's possible.
Yeah. So for all of you, Bilal is a freelance dancer, actually just like me. And we were in the same dance academy a long time ago already. So I mean, yeah, you're for sure in the same position a little bit as me. Like, you know, the dance world is not so thriving at the moment, I guess, if we can say it like that. But things will change. But anyway, you are a member of the Kunstenbond, which is like the union for the arts in the Netherlands, right?
Exactly, yeah. And I'm a member of the board of the group Theater and Dance.
Theater and Dance.
Yeah, so the Kunstenbond is sectioned in several groups, and yeah. I'm in the board of Theater and Dance.
Okay, so I know there's a lot of freelancers who sometimes are... I know there's a lot of freelancers who work in the arts who are listening to this podcast, but also there's a lot of other types of freelancers. Mm-hmm. So I do want to say that because, of course, we're going to talk a little bit about the arts. We're going to talk about theater and dance. So this podcast is very much intended for freelancers working in the arts. But, of course, it is still a topic that is valuable for everybody to listen to. And why I invited you on the podcast is because you work for the Kunstenbond, so the Union of the Arts, and you give these workshops on knowing your worth. And I just wanted to ask you, like, what are these workshops actually? Like, what is this workshop about?
Well, those workshops are basically focused on teaching everyone. Well, we focus on the students. Let's say like the students that are about to leave school or about to go into their stage year, they need to learn the basic rules of what is going on outside in the working field.
Yeah.
And they need to understand what their worth is. Because usually like we tend to kind of sell underworth, and also that's what's being used against us. So, you know, we focus really on telling them, okay, look, there's a certain worth to your work and to your experience that you have, and you need to find out where to look up this information and how to sell yourself in the right way.
Yeah. So when we talk about worth, what is worth? Is it just the money sum that you are asked, like that you are talking and that you're informing people about? Or is it also, I don't know, like what belongs under worth for you? Because there is always also probably like a psychological idea behind worth. But
well, you can go really deep with that, of course. Well, mostly we focus, of course, what it boils down to the money, because that's what's then in the end really important for you to stay alive.
Yeah.
But it goes also about, like, we focus also on experience, of course, on like what does that mean? Like, everything that you've gone through already as a dancer or whatever, like artist, mm-hmm. entrepreneur, like whatever you have collected experience in is important to what you are worth as in your business.
Yeah.
Like not necessarily talking money, but like what worth do you bring to your field?
Yeah. that goes deeper than I think, you know, like, yeah. It's what is the actual worth of what you're bringing? But I agree with you. I mean, if I think back of myself as a student, I actually had no clue on a financial base what I was worth. And then when I left school, I still had no clue. And then you come to jobs and then you get paid this much, but then you do a job after and you get paid that much. And you're like, wait, some things are not really the same here. So what is it actually? And I was wondering, you know, like, cause you are here in the Netherlands and you're a freelance dancer yourself. Have you encountered these kinds of, let's say, incidents or just examples that people are offering you very different things than what you are used to? Underpaid, for example. Do you have any example, for example, like, you don't have to say the company name or whatever, but just like that people get an idea of like how this is in, like, how this comes to practice, basically. Yeah.
Well, of course, I've experienced lots of times that money offered or contracts offered were just like completely off of what it has to be. And honestly, in the beginning, I didn't know. Like when I got out of school, like it was just randomly learning from my mistakes, basically, until I actually found out how to find the information that is valid to me in order to know what is a good contract and what is a worth that I have, a market worth. And I did experience a lot of times already that then people would try and offer me an amount of money where I then had to say, sorry, this is not enough, or this is not, the contract doesn't fit me, or like something was off there.
Yeah.
And in the end, that's then always a discussion about why does that happen? And of course, not everyone is in the same position. So every company has different funding. And that's an important part, to find out what kind of funding do they have, which is possible to find out as well. And
because they're made public, actually.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And that's something I also didn't know until short time ago.
Like that you can look it up, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. You can just look it up. And it's hard because in the end, it's numbers. And well, first of all, you just see a big number, and then you need to find out, okay, but what is happening with that money, of course?
Yeah.
And you need to get realistic with it, which is very hard. So that information feel like is the trickiest to get.
Mm-hmm.
But it is interesting anyways to see what happens with the money. So in the end, it boils always down to that I have to go into that discussion, except for you already get a good offer.
I think to really honestly talk about, you know, like how it is working as a freelancer in the arts field, it also, of course, depends a little bit on where you are in the world. Here in the Netherlands, as a dancer, you earn actually more as you progress in the years. So your salary is based on your experience. But even within that, there is a very, very, very often there's people who just get this X amount of funding and they want to have this X amount of dancers to work for them. But actually, with that amount of funding, they cannot offer that amount of dancers, basically, that the right amount of money. So it's also a thing of like, yeah, but then you got to hire less people. And I think that very often there's this thing that young dancers, young freelancers, they feel like they just want to work. So they do take these types of jobs, which is then, you know, it's this vicious circle that this never improves basically over time. How would you, and I think, well, I have multiple questions right now, but my first question would be like, how would you see that change? And my second question is, that is, I think, the intention also of your workshops, right? To create a healthier environment for later, for also younger people, to teach them not to just take anything, I think.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly what my mission is, let's say, what I see as my mission, to really spread the word so that we all can stand together stronger in that field.
Yeah.
Because the moment, exactly what you say, the moment that people feel like, oh, I just want to work. Sorry, the moment people feel like I just want to work and whatever I do, like, just give me a bit of money, whatever. Like, they take every job
just
for the sake of having a job.
Yeah.
Or like for the sake of, oh, that's cool, so I want to do that or whatever. So they just do it. But that means that they lower the standards for everyone.
Yeah.
So the moment you accept working for 80 euros a day, that means that the company sees, okay, we can offer 80 euros a day and that works. Like, people accept it. We will find somebody who does it, which is in the end really crazy.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. That thought itself is just, it ruins our prices.
Yeah.
All of our prices. Because in the end, why would you want to, where's the motivation for you as an entrepreneur? Then, like, if you have your own company, why would you have the motivation to pay more than 80 euros if you know that somebody's doing that for that money?
Yeah.
You will find it. You will, of course, not find then also the experienced people that already know about all of that.
Of course.
You know, like that is something they definitely have to cut in.
Yeah.
But it always depends on, like, what quality work you want to have. And yeah.
Which is, I think, I just wanted to touch on that subject of what you said, that, you know, like, the younger people will then take these jobs and the older people, the more experienced people there will be like, well, you know, so these people who offer these projects and offer these contracts, they will basically end up with less experienced people. But you already see that happen in the Netherlands in, like, the internship system, is that, you know, some people, they are just like, we take 3 interns and we take 2 professionals and then we create a piece, and the interns are doing exactly the same as the professionals, but they are paid hell of a lot less, because by law they don't have to be paid according to a certain standard.
Yeah, that's a loophole that's being used, of course.
Yes,
that's what I mean. Like, as soon as there's a possibility to use something in order, like, to keep your company up and running as you would like to see it, then it's being used, of course. And I get the idea behind it. That's the thing, the stagiaire idea is actually great, to tell, okay, you're still a student, but you're gonna work as a dancer already, like, or whatever. Yeah. Like, you work already in the field and you get the experience, but you don't get paid the full amount because you're not there yet.
Exactly, yeah.
And that is being used. Then you see exactly what you say, companies saying, okay, then we take lots of stagiaires because then we can have a big production with 20 people on stage.
It happens, yeah.
Instead of, like, 5 that we can actually pay.
Pay, yeah.
You know, and then the thing is, what you have to realize is that even though you have the status of a stagiaire, doesn't necessarily mean that quality-wise you will be worse on stage than an experienced dancer.
No, that's true, yeah.
That depends really on
you
and... Yeah. What you can bring and offer.
Yeah.
And that's a part of the workshop. Like, bringing up that mindset in the younger people, the students, to know, to realize that even though you still have the status of not having experience, that doesn't necessarily mean that you cannot contribute quality work.
Yeah.
It always depends on what you can really offer, and you need to be self-confident about that, and that self-confidence needs to be built up. And especially in the dance world, that's something that is not built up. Like, we build down exactly.
You destroy people.
That's it.
It's not that encouraging. It's always feedback, critics. It's not it doesn't really happen so often that people are being recognized for their strengths or being nurtured in their strengths, let's say, inside these schools.
Exactly. Plus, we're still being raised as dancers. I think, personally, that there's a system problem already from a young age on. Like, people that, for example, start as kids already dancing with ballet. Ballet is still very, very much in the old ways, built up on a system that is very hierarchic.
Yeah.
So you learn that you are the little one.
Yeah.
And you will stay the little one. There's a choreographer on top of you. And before that, there's the dancers with more experience. And then there's the soloists.
Yeah, the soloists.
There's this whole system like a pyramid. And basically, you are really on the bottom somewhere. And that's how you're being raised. And exactly what you say, like you get criticism, of course, the whole time. Like it's always about improving you, and you hardly ever get told like, okay, this is your strength. You need to work that out. That's something for you to find out. Plus, in an education, you are constantly confronted with yourself. Like you see yourself in the mirror.
Literally all day, every day.
All day long.
Yeah, oh my God.
So you know your body like in and out.
Yeah.
And you also know everything you don't like about it.
Yeah, that's 100% sure.
And with that feeling, you get out in the working field just feeling like...
insecure.
Yeah, and then... you need to, yeah, then I come in and tell you, well, you're worth something. And they look at me like,
am I? Oh my God. They're like, oh, finally, after all these years, somebody's giving me some recognition.
Exactly. And it feels weird. And I know, like, I've been feeling the same way. Like, when I started working, I was like so thankful for the work. And like, which is okay, but yeah. I was too thankful in a way. I was like, okay. And, like, I actually get, like, my work gets recognized. That was something new for me. Something, yeah. Oh my God, how did that happen? Like, all those years that I've spent, like, just feeling miserable.
I think it's so crazy to think about because, you know, on this podcast, I also talk with a lot of different types of freelancers. You know, like, freelancers who work as freelance marketers or consultants or coaches or people who work in social media, whatever. And it's, you know, to have this conversation with those types of people, it's, you know, it's one thing always is like how to put a price on yourself, which is basically a bit this know your worth. But very often, yes, okay, it happens that there is like jobs that people get offered and they pay less, but it's not like in the dance world and the arts world where it's so, where a lot of people are so insecure about themselves, what you just said, and that because of these insecurities, they just feel like, oh my God, any job would be good because anyway, the dance world is kind of like a race almost. It's like you start with 25 in your education and you finish with 15 and 2 years later, you're only with 10 people who are actually work in the field. So it's like this race of like who wins the longest run basically at this job. But I really support that idea, what you say, to change this mindset of already in school that you go out with the feeling of like, okay, this is what I can offer. And then that makes me work this much as well. But then I have a question though for you, because sometimes there's, you know, like you have to work for free, or sometimes there is like free jobs or paid for less, but they have benefits. For example, if it's a big exposure to a company or you get benefits later from it, could you maybe tell me your opinion on like, when do you work for free or when do you work for less? Because yeah, it's hard because I'm always the person that says like, no, never work for less, never work for free. But then sometimes I can see the benefits. What would you say if people ask you this question?
Well, it's something that I'm really against in general. Like,
yeah,
just saying like, if you are a professional in your field and somebody offers you something for free, like as in like you need to work for free, then there needs to be a good reason for it.
Yeah.
There definitely needs to be a very good reason. If there's not a good reason, then you don't do it, because why would you do it? Why would you sell something cheaper or for free if you want to take yourself serious as like an entrepreneur and your own work?
Yeah.
So what you say, there needs to be a benefits in a way, or like those are the two options. You either get benefits from it in some way, and that you need to know for yourself what is a good enough benefits,
mm-hmm.
or you have a colleague, a friend, whatever, that you know, like, just needs to build up, or like, you know, you can help out. Like, that is something I would consider, like, okay, I know a friend of mine is starting his company or is starting a business and doesn't actually have money or mm-hmm. whatever and does need help somewhere.
Yeah.
Like, you can do favors, you know, as in, like, to people that are really, really close to you. It's not like, oh, I know this
give
person from whatever.
Yeah.
So, but somebody who's close to me and needs help, will get help from me, of course. And I would feel personally bad to know, like, if somebody would have to go into big expenses for me, like, just in order to do something. But if I know I can help that person and I like that person,
yeah,
and I want to help that person, then I'll do it. But other than that, there's no way that I would do anything for free.
I have going on that for free topic. I have a situation, let's say. No, not personally, but I have a situation in my mind that comes to me. This would probably never, never, ever happen in any other fields. But in the dance field, very often, you go to auditions, of course. An audition is like an interview to get a job, basically. Mm-hmm. And auditions you always take for free because it's actually you're trying to get their job. So it's not about being paid for an audition. But sometimes...
Sorry, well, you actually sometimes even pay for auditions.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that is crazy. And that is something that I'm like, why would I go pay to show myself to you? And I see these things and it's like, I don't know. That's something that's a scandal, but not that they pay you to audition for them. You know, like you're not being paid your time or your travels to come to audition.
True.
But in some situations, it happens that an audition is a week long and it's kind of like a workshop where the choreographer invites a couple of people over because he's not really sure whether he wants to choose this girl or this guy or anybody. But he does want to work with this group and he does want to take inspiration out of that group for a next piece. So you go there and you are not being paid as actually giving your input and giving your inspiration because it's kind of wrapped up in the jacket as this is a workshop audition. Mm-hmm. But the person, if he doesn't hire you, he might take your material inside his piece. It has happened with people. I've spoken with people that it actually has happened. But then what I said is like, you know, in the world where you are, you know, let's say if you're a graphic designer and you design and there is a company that needs a new logo and said, we want to hire you for like, we want you to like audition for us for 5 days in which you create a bunch of logos. And based on that, we will take you as a employee. But if they don't take him, they can take his logo. But the guy can say, well, that logo, I can copyright it or patent it that you cannot use it unless you actually hire me. This with dancers, it's going to be very, very hard to do because you kind of want the job. If it's like a nice week of workshop and it's an audition and you hope to get a job, but you don't get the job, but he uses all your material. Mm-hmm. You cannot go to a choreographer and say, well, if you don't hire me after, you cannot take anything of what I created for you in that week. This almost doesn't happen.
It's a very specific example.
I know, but this is how crazy it gets.
Yeah, I know. And it's a tricky one. It's really a tricky one because when you started telling the story, I was like, well, yeah, you know, you actually get a workshop.
Yeah.
But then you started with talking about, okay, but they use the material of you without you being in the piece.
It's happened to me.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay. So that's where it really comes in handy to learn something about copyright. Yeah. Because what I also tell during the workshops is that the biggest problem with us really being able to represent ourselves is that we don't learn on how to really read and make contracts.
Mm-hmm.
Something that is going a bit, I'm taking a bit of route around to
That's
get
fine.
To your question.
That's fine.
But basically what happens is that we have our, as a freelancer, we have our own businesses, right?
Yeah.
So you have to be in charge of everything that goes on in your company.
Yes.
Right? So you should be making the prices and you should be making the contracts that other people have to sign. What happens, though, is that in our world, in the dance world, it happens the other way around. So you are being hired and offered a contract that you have to sign. So they are saying under what circumstances you will work for them and you will sign it. Which is twisted because in every other field,
As a freelancer, you're like, this is my rate, this is my contract, exactly. Hire me for this, and that's it.
Exactly. Yeah. So this is your offer.
Yeah.
And they can take it or they can leave it. But we are being like kind of mind flipped, and like they tell us, so you are being offered like that and you can take it or not.
Yeah.
And that's where the issues come in, because we don't know anything about contracts and our rights. And that is a freaking hard topic, of course, but it's something that is really helpful to have in mind, because if you get ever like a contract from somebody else, then you can always see immediately what is wrong with the contract or what you would like to change, which shows immediately that you know what you're doing. And it's a topic that's very hard to get into, and I'm still working on it a lot, but it's very necessary to have.
Yeah.
And that comes, now I come back to your story, that is here coming in very handy, because if you go to such a workshop, the actual procedure would have to be that if you go there saying you take that workshop that is for production, but it's not sure yet that you are in the production, you would have to set up a contract to copyright whatever you do. Yes. Inside that workshop, if you are not being within that piece yourself, nobody is able to use your intellectual
input.
Yeah. Or your, it's actually
domain.
Like you own that.
Yeah.
That is yours.
Domain, actually.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So once you contributed and they don't take you in, you should state that your material, like, is not being, they're not able to use it except for they buy out whatever you created.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's how it should be.
Should be, yes.
But because we're stupid.
We have no idea.
We have no idea. Yeah. Let's say it like this. We're not educated in that. Yeah. We just go and do it. Also because of, I would do the same, honestly. Like, I would be just like, oh, well, you know, it's a workshop that I can just, for fun, like, if I don't get the job, I'm... Actually, that's how I go to every audition. Like, if I go to an audition, I see it as a workshop. I see it just for having
fun.
I also
see it like that, you know?
And if I get a job out of it, perfect. Otherwise, well, then it's not meant to be. But if that happens, that my material would be used otherwise in a piece without me actually doing the material, that is where problems come in. And that's...
Actually,
I can understand how that can upset you very much, but as long as there's no signed contract beforehand, there's nothing you can do about it. Plus, you would need to have proof. So you would have to film.
Record. Yes.
Like, you have to
it's
record
gonna be
yourself
a whole
at least.
Thing. And I think a lot of dancers, they just want to like then do the workshop. Hopefully they get it. But I do really, what you said really is that when you get a contract from others, actually as a freelancer, it's the thing what you said, you are your own business. I've been repeating this all the time. It's really great that you're saying it. And that when you get a contract, that you actually, it's not a one-way street. It's actually a both way thing, because you are a business, they are a business. So it's a business to business thing. It's not they're hiring you because you're just like an employee. You're actually, they're in business with you at that moment. So contract wise, you can make changes, and you actually can also make your own contract, which these things, how to make these changes and thing. I am going to record a podcast together with Merel van der Wouden. She's a negotiating expert, and she will tell us a little bit more about how to negotiate really on a business to business level, not just thinking like, okay, I'm going to be hired and this is it. No, but really, if you feel like there needs to be some changes, or if you want to go up, or if you already work for a choreographer, for example, for 2 years, that you're going to be paid again the same. You're like, well, after 2 years, I want to have a raise, because it's normal sometimes to have raises. How do you negotiate that? So for everybody, I just wanted to quickly put that in here, that there is a very important, cool podcast coming up with Merel, which I'm very excited about. But back to the topic is to put that in practice, what you said, to create a contract before you're entering a workshop audition where they know you, they might take the material. In the dance world, people would look at you like you're crazy. They'd be like, whoa, who is this person to think like that? But
exactly.
It's actually how it should be.
Yeah, that's a good note. Like what I just stated is really a vision how it should be.
Yeah.
Because that's how it works in every other field except for ours. And well, in the art world, it's really like the dancers are really behind with everything.
Yeah.
Like every other art scene has gotten a voice through unions.
Yeah.
Way earlier than dancers have.
Yeah.
Musicians are great with unions. They have been like doing that for ages before dancers stepped in to actually stand up for their rights.
Yeah.
And that is something that we're behind. So we need to work that out, that we are actually getting there. A musician that would create in a workshop like music pieces would definitely able to copyright that.
Yeah, exactly. Immediately. So it should be the same actually with movement or movement phrases actually, that well, when it's really done, like it's just copy, you know, you can very quickly see it. It's not that hard to think like, oh, that wasn't true, you know. But how to set that up is of course how to make that change. And I think that is why your workshops at all these academies are so important to do. And that's also why I ask you to be on this podcast. And this whole theme of knowing your worth, I want to bring this back more often, but I also would like to hear from other fields, from other types of freelancers in different fields, how their situations are. And I'm trying to get somebody from a freelancer union, like just a union for just freelancers, to also go on the podcast to talk about this, because I think this is just something that, I mean, it's your mission, but I also always feel like, oh, there needs to change so much in this dance world. And I think any type of young freelancer in the beginning of the career, they don't know a lot. And I think you just need to find the right resources and be educated in it in the right way. And you will set yourself up for a more healthy situation, environment, career, I think, or just how to deal with these people.
And I think that's normal, because you are like, once you start a business, you're really focusing on what you want to do.
Yeah.
So like you set up your business and everything you're focused on is like, this is what I want to do. Like, this is you're just creating.
Yeah.
You're creating. And I get that. Like everybody is the same. Then you're in that train of thought and you completely let go of what is the business side of it. And that comes in later. What really helped, like promoting Gunst Devon.
Yes.
No, promoting like every kind of union that you could like imagine in every field. It's great to go and find help there.
Yeah.
It's like really a small amount of money that you usually have to pay monthly to be a part of that, but you will get usually great benefits out of it.
Yeah.
To support you in exactly those questions that you don't have any idea of, to set up your business or to keep your business on the radar, like, or to help you in any question, contracts, for example.
Yeah, how the would legal you, thing, yeah.
How would you know anything about, like, about the laws and about how to set up a contract? How would you know that without actually going through an education?
Yeah, in law,
and
yeah.
Hiring, like, a lawyer just for, like, starting up a business is, if you don't have loaded parents that can support you,
it's going to be tricky, you know?
You'll have a problem.
Yeah.
You will be already in debt before you even started business. And that's something that keeps you away from actually going into that topic, because you're in the creative state, right?
Yeah.
But if you would go like with questions like that towards like a union that can support you legally, for your questions, specific questions, you can't just go there and ask them to set up your whole legal administration.
Yeah, of course.
But you can go with really guided questions towards how you should proceed or like whatever you encounter.
Yeah.
Like what I did, for example, a lot is sending in contracts that I get sent. I send that further with questions of, please scan that contract and give me feedback on it, on those and those points, because I'm not sure if that is good for me or not.
Yeah.
And I'll get feedback on, okay, like, look, here you would need to ask for a bit more clarification, or this point should go out because it actually really damages you.
Yeah.
Or it gets you in a position where you don't have any rights, or, you know, that's something that is really important, because those contracts, of course, are also written in a language that you didn't learn.
Of course.
And then with the time, with that help, you can learn it way faster to read those contracts without having to go through a whole education. And that's important to get into.
I agree with you. And I was actually going to ask you, like, do you have any tip or any advice, but you actually gave it, like, unions are great to be a part of, especially as a freelancer, and especially if you are working in a field like dance, to have backing and to have a support system in a way. I did want to ask you, the last question is, how do you find out how much you are worth in the Netherlands? Let's just put it in the Netherlands.
In the Netherlands, you weigh how much cheese you can outweigh. No. Well, basically, in the Netherlands, you have the CAO's.
Yeah.
Right?
The work agreements.
Exactly, the work agreements that are being put up between usually different parties of, like, the field itself and, like, a union.
Yeah.
Like, for dancers, for example, it's the Kunstbond that is actually in conversation with them.
With the government and making these CIOs.
Big institutions.
Yeah.
Like, basically, you would have big companies in the field, the heads of those, like, having conversations with the Kunstbond, sitting down and talking about the rights that have to go be written down in that agreement. And in that agreement, you will also find a written down worth that you will get through within the years. So you can see a whole sheet where you can just see, okay, with each experienced year that you have in that field, your amount will be raised by this and this money.
Yeah.
And then that you will see a monthly salary. But that monthly salary is going, that is very important to know, for being actually hired full time.
Yeah.
In a company that is not for freelancers. I know that at the moment a colleague of mine at the Kunstbond is busy with making a translation tool.
Yeah.
For freelancers.
Okay, great.
For that time being, for now, it is important for freelancers to know that the amount that is stated there, you need to put another 40% on top of that, because these are the benefits that you will miss as being a freelancer that somebody has that is actually hired full time.
Because of pension, because of all these things that you have to...
All of it.
Basically have to put, you know, there's much more to it than just money that you can spend on clothes. Yeah. Yeah.
There's everything to it. Like all the costs that you will have as a freelancer yourself that a company would actually cover while even paying you the salary that you get. And that's like talking about holidays, you know, like you get a holiday fee paid.
The 13 months or...
Exactly. Yeah. You get what you said, you get a pension, like you get actually an insurance that is so expensive as when you're like a freelancer.
Yeah.
And that's an important one actually to have for all dancers. And I know that 1% of the dancers actually have it because it's so expensive to just have like... The possibility to be insured for not being able to work anymore.
Yeah.
What if you get injured? What if you then have to miss those performances or for 3 months you cannot work anymore?
Yeah.
If you don't have the insurance for that, which is very expensive for a freelancer, then you lose a lot of money, and that's all money that you lose. And that's the issue with sometimes it feels a lot to put those 40% on top of that money.
Yeah.
But it is money that is crucial for you to have in order to be able to actually have all social securities that you would have as being hired.
I know this is a this is a very tricky thing. And I think also depending on each field, there is different amounts and each field does their own thing. but it's really this education thing that we are, as freelancers, we're not educated, what you said, that you need an insurance for when you are sick or when you are not able to work or when you, for certain reasons, a lot of people from us don't know. Actually, my father is a freelancer, so he told me, okay, you need to get this insurance. But I was like, wow, that's a lot of money for this insurance. And I was like, damn, do I really need this one? So yeah, I think it's about this whole being educated in what should be part of your worth. It's the pension, it's the social securities, it's all of these things. And I think what you said in the Netherlands, it is really that you can actually look up these numbers. In every field, every union does these things, and they make these CIOs, these work agreements, these paid agreements, let's say.
Exactly.
And I think for sure in every country, they have their own system in place for these kind of things. There's unions everywhere who regulate these things, basically. So basically, you can just search for it and you can find it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And like, if I can make advertisement again. No, I'm not making advertisement, but actually a helpful tool, a really helpful tool. It costs you nothing if you're in a union. Basically, this is important for dancers, freelance dancers again. There is a European, no, not a European. Is it European? You have a dance passport.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you heard about that, but it's basically something from the International Federation of Actors.
Mm-hmm.
And so that passport is very helpful for you if you are in a union. Let's say you are living in the Netherlands. You are part of the Kunstenbond. You're a member there. You pay your monthly fee, but you will have work abroad somewhere in Europe. You work, for example, in France.
Yeah.
But you don't have any idea about the laws there. You don't have any idea about your, like, anything there.
Yeah.
So to get the information is very, very tough, because usually then also those websites that state that will be only in that language.
Yeah.
So if you don't know French so well,
oh my god, struggle a lot.
You will struggle a lot.
Yeah.
But what you can do is, with that passport, basically you can easily get help from the union in that specific country. So what then happens is, instead of going to the Kunstenbund and asking for them to contact somebody in that union over there,
you can go immediately to them.
Exactly. You go to that union.
Amazing.
You just contact that union in France, and then you will get help from them without having to pay a fee, because you pay a fee back home in the Netherlands.
Oh, wow.
So it's something that the unions, the art unions, have formed together there to help each other out, and especially for freelancers that work a lot abroad, to get that, like, just in a system. And this is really helpful, because whenever you run into trouble abroad, you can just go to that union and they will help you out.
Yeah.
You will have a backup always.
Yeah.
And especially if it's a language that you don't have any clue of.
And you don't know any about tax regulations or laws or anything.
Exactly.
There, you can just show your dancer's passport and be like, you guys gotta help me out right now.
Exactly.
Oh, this is, I have heard from this somewhere down the line, but never really knew what value it had, or not what the intention of it
was. It's amazing that happened.
Yeah.
And a funny thing is, like, it was already, they had something like that back in the days, apparently, but mm-hmm. It wasn't of use.
Yeah.
And so it kind of disappeared, and they renewed it. They brought it back out, I think, 2 years ago or something.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was a really interesting talk. Like, I was there at this whole conference in Rotterdam back then.
Awesome.
Like, it was so cool to see that there is actually this coming up, and that everybody is working together on making that happen. And that you have the opportunity to go abroad and still get help from another union, because you are in a union back in your place.
Yeah.
So that's the biggest value you can get out of there.
That's great. Well, I think this was so informative for me personally as a freelance dancer. Of course, what I said in the beginning of the episode, that we're going to focus a little bit more on the the arts and on dance. But in the end, like, I think this episode still had a lot of valuable information for all kinds of freelancers, just about, like, also what you said, like, social securities are part of your worth, basically. So don't forget your pension, all of these kinds of things. I think we're gonna wrap this up. If you have any other last tip. I mean, of course, like, you're from the Kunstbond, and I'm a fan of the Kunstbond as well. So, of course, if you guys are here in the Netherlands, make sure you look into that. But I do also urge every freelancer to become part of a union, because they're so valid. And I think as freelancer, very often we all feel like that we are alone and that we have to do everything by ourselves. But actually, there are unions that, you know, have whole teams that will help you. You just pay a little small fee each month, but then you have access to, like, amazing resources, basically.
True. Yeah, that's, like, what I would like to give everyone, like, as an information, is really that what I see happening a lot is that especially young people think that a union is, like, I tell them about the benefits and they only see those benefits in that moment, as in, like, okay, I need help right now, so I will become a member right now to get the help. And as soon as I'm done with that help, I'm going out again.
Yeah.
And that doesn't really make sense, because you have to see the bigger picture in there, that the more members are actually subscribed in that union, the more power you will have as a union to actually have impact also on the politics.
Exactly.
Like right now in this corona crisis, there was lots of battling with getting more money, more funding for all those companies that otherwise would have to shut down.
Yeah.
And if there's only a few hundred members in that union,
you have no say. The government will be like, okay, bye.
Exactly. Like, we don't care about 200 people. But if you say, hey, we have 10,000 people there that are actually backing you up, then there is big pressure. And if there's more than that, if there's 20,000, that's even better. Like, the more people are in there, the more power you have to actually change something and to make that field, like, strong and actually also very regulated.
It's about regulation also. Of course,
the better you can represent your whole community, the better you stand in that whole discussion, and that's important. And plus, you get the benefits. The benefits are kind
it's
of like
extra.
Really
it's a benefit.
Exactly.
It's about you, it's a union. It's like, it's about uniting. It's about creating a community. It's about standing strong all together. And especially for freelancers, there is so much work to be done for our rights and our laws and our legal numbers and I don't know, whatever. So I do think I support that as well a lot. So down below, you guys will find the link to a bunch of unions here in the Netherlands, and especially the Kunstenbond, because I do want to just give some unions out there so you guys have some resources where you can go and just search on. I know that there is a super large freelancers union in the United States, which is really cool. I did some research on it and I was like, oh, that's cool. There is a dancers union in Germany. There is a dancers union in the UK. So I really urge everybody to look into where you live, basically, and find your union. Thank you, Bilal, for having this great talk and so much value. And I also just enjoyed talking with you.
Same here.
And that was it for today. Next week on Tuesday, we'll be back with a new podcast episode with another guest and another topic. I hope you guys stay healthy these days, and I'll talk to you guys later. Ciao.